What is up? I'm talking probably too loud. You're listening to the Yo, Is This Racist podcast?
Yeah, this is a podcast where we're both on weird phone Skype technology in two different locations in Los Angeles, both trying to smash a salad in our face while we record.
Tawny's calling from outer space, and I'm calling from the 80s, so... Oh, yeah. We are at our jobs right now.
So,
we're doing
basically,
this.
Both of us are basically an episode of Out of This World. Remember that show? Mm-hmm.
I was going to say Sliders. Sliders?
Yeah, Sliders, but they didn't really go to outer space. They were interdimensional. Out of This World, the little girl's dad was an alien in a cube. No, this is the show where we talk to you about your racism questions and voicemails with the help of a special guest. But first, we apparently do this bullshit for a minute. I'm Tawny.
Oh, my God. My name is Andrew T. We are here. My favorite part about this is we're looking at the empty, darkened studio on this Google Hangout thing, and it's very sad and weird.
But I'm looking at you, Andrew. I don't see the darkened studio. I'm just staring at your face.
I have them side by side. Okay, this is not fun or interesting. Anyway, the studio looks depressing. Holy fuck, what do we normally do? I'm so, like, thrown.
Well, you're
I finally escaped.
Yeah,
I escaped Tawny's basement.
And then, speaking of jail, you were put into jail once again.
Yeah.
In form. The Twitter FBI came for you.
I was, yes, that's right. The my big Andrew news is I was in Twitter jail for about 2.5 hours. They sent me Wednesday morning? They sent me an email that just said my account had been suspended for hate speech, which is amazing. Yeah, it was pretty nuts. I assume it was from Andrew Yang bots, because I had gotten into it a little bit with them a couple days before over... he posted this thing that sort of implied that he was at this Asian event, and he had, like, implying that he had sort of broad Asian support. And one of the pictures he used was from one of my friends, previous guest in the show, Tez Ahmed's picture, and she retweeted it and was like, I'm not an Andrew Yang supporter. I was in this picture asking him what's up with his racist ass immigration policy. my words, not hers. Yeah, and then so I posted that, and then I kicked up a hive of Andrew Yang people who are not the dumbest, worst people, but they're very dumb and very bad, and their fucking candidate is a white supremacist bootlicker. Can't say it enough.
Well, apparently you said it just enough to get Twitter to decide that you were actually a hate person, that you were a hate group, and so they suspended you permanently.
Oh my God. And I guess, yeah, they didn't say for sure it was that, but and when I appealed, I was like, you haven't even said what it is that I've said that's allegedly hateful. Anyway, so yeah. Maybe it wasn't. Maybe it was improv people, because the day before I'd talked shit about improv. So it could be anything.
You know, I will say that it could have been improv people, but improv people would just be like, despite their whole gig being like, we have to work together to make something, they're not that organized to all report you. They're too busy memorizing 30 pages of dialogue for a part they're probably not going to get. So, you know, I'm betting it was the Yang Gong that
yeah,
we
feels like.
But then you were set free. The world was
yeah.
Surrounded.
Probably Tawny did it.
I did get pretty blue check mark. I used my full white lady let me talk to a manager powers. I was like, you motherfuckers. And I just think, like, truly someone just read the words that you had written and went, oh, we did this wrong.
Or that it was clearly coordinated by Andrew Yang people, because I'm going to assume everyone reporting me has a little stupid blue hat or whatever in their profile name. It was dumb and depressing. Truly, though, part of me was like, maybe I'm just done with Twitter. How dumb would that be?
As soon as they reinstated your account, were you kind of like, oh, were you kind of like, shit, I yeah. wish I stayed gone?
Well, yeah. Especially this week, because the news was depressing as fuck.
The news is very bad.
I mean, on the political shit, it's just this shit in Syria and Iraq with the Kurds is just horrible. I don't think we have anything to add to it, but it is horrible.
Yeah, there are smarter people to go to for this information, and I'm sure you all have, because our listeners are also smart. I imagine our listeners, I wonder the Venn diagram of places they get their news sources from, and how is, maybe Venn diagram's the wrong word. I want to see where all the overlaps are, and like how many times we're sort of touching on something that they're like, yes, I've already digested all the info on this.
Oh, I would say you never know. Slash, look, this is just marketing research at this point. Which is, someone probably does know. Someone at Earwolf probably knows. They just haven't told us.
Yeah, maybe who knows? Not. We're neither of us are even in the same building as anyone involved in making this right now.
Yeah. I don't know. Which of the depressing ass pieces of news do you want to talk about first?
I mean, should we talk about the 9-year-old whose principal called him the N-word?
Oh, okay. We're going light first.
Yeah, I'm slightly light. I mean,
oh my god.
Yeah. So this was in, and of course my internet is down, so I can't even tell you where this was.
Oh, I can tell you, it's in Maine. It was in Maine.
Oh, thank you.
At a place called Willard Elementary School. Basically, the assistant principal called a mixed boy the N-word, which is crazy.
Well, you know what's, and not that this super matters, but it does a little. So the boy was apparently brought in to the assistant principal's office for bullying, and apparently name calling had been part of the bullying that he'd allegedly been engaged in. So in trying to create a terrible, stupid fucking example, the assistant principal said, "What if I were to call you this?" but said the word. So this is where sometimes I get into, like, there is a difference between, like, using the word and talking about using the word. Both bad. Both shouldn't have been done here. But I can see why a dumb person like this assistant principal was even more confounded by this. Because, yeah, I'm just drawing that distinction because I think that's where a lot of stupid people's confusion comes in, basically.
Yeah. Well, it's also like the talking about it, talking about the word kind of situation is like, you know, it's just like probably should be more fine, but we live in a society where like any loophole is going to get used by racists. Right.
Well,
it's the same as like the Huck Finn thing, right? It's just like people just delight in it. And it's like, well, I'm not saying it. I'm talking about saying it. It's like, all right, you are.
It's also like you can talk about saying it and still not say it. Mm-hmm. You can allude to the word. You can get your point across to this child of like, what if I were to call you a terrible slur? What if I were to call you a racially derogatory name? Like, you can just, the kid gets it. He's 9. He's not 2.
Yeah. It's also like that, weirdly, I also think that like just doesn't work. But it's like that kind of equivalent of like when like white people are like, oh, you know, when like things have just sort of asymmetric power, because here's the other thing, whatever this kid was calling the kid, it's not like they're drawing the as quote unquote, this is as bad as something else line is idiotic.
The other counterpoint is like that if she's like, what if I were to call you this? The kid was probably like, I have been called that here. So, so your point is lost because I've experienced this. This is fucking Maine. Okay, yeah. So
not as good a point. Oh god.
Well, should we talk about the Atlanta Braves just trying to do the absolute fucking least bare minimum that they could do?
So this is last week.
So Ryan Helsley, who is a pitcher for the St. Louis Cardinals. That's where the Cardinals are, right?
Ooh, you got it.
Yeah.
Tommy loves the baseball.
He expressed, disappointment in the Atlanta Braves' use of the Tomahawk Chop, Tomahawk Graphics, et cetera. And so the Braves responded and said, Ryan Helsley is a member of the Cherokee Nation, and he called the chop and everything else associated with it disrespectful. So the Braves responded and said, you know what we're going to do? We get it. We want to be nice. We're going to go ahead and not give out those giant foam chops. You know what else we're going to do? We're not going to play that terrible music that leads the whole fucking stadium to start yelling in a terrifying racist chant.
Yeah.
And we're not going to put the graphics up on the screen. And then in the rest of their statement, they said, we're going to continue to examine how we activate our brand with fans. It's like, dude, this isn't like a Yoplait ad where you're like, how do we get the word out? It's like, activate your brand. I was just like, that kind of like, just bold marketing speak in the midst of this sensitivity conversation was just so gross to me.
It's also this like kind of hilariously gross thing where it's like, this is the like, you know, stadium wide version of not being racist to someone's face. Like they're only not doing it because he's there.
Right. Only while he's in the game.
Yeah. And then we'll, you know, of course go back to doing it when he is not there or they're not playing him. It's just like a gross racist thing that I'm surprised that they acknowledged it at all though. Cause now they like, how do they justify playing it any other time?
Truly. Just being like, well, if no one tells us what they are, we don't have to think about them, I guess. I don't know. Well, at least that was one game with less chanting. I did see someone tweet that they tried to take a video of people in the stands still doing it, of course.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Yeah, it's racist. Stop doing it.
Cut it out, Atlanta.
Oh, God. Okay.
You know, we're dreading even getting to this one. Everyone knows what it is.
Well, I don't know if there's that much to say, but Tatiana Jefferson was murdered in her home, a black woman, for no reason by the police. Her neighbor had called not even 911. I think it was like 311 or whatever non-emergency number was there. Just to say, like, it was late at night and her door was open. I actually saw an interview with him and he basically was despondent and upset and, you know, was saying things like, if I hadn't done it, she'd be alive today, kind of blaming himself a little bit. I didn't watch the whole thing. I'm trying to remember now. I mean, I think it was a thing with the neighbor, like, sort of blaming himself for it. There's an element, obviously, the cop is just like, it went from, I guess the video of the body cam is like within 4 seconds of saying the police were outside and he just opened fire. And this woman, so, you know, among other things, like there was a little bit of an attempt to like talk about how she had a gun in her home,
insane,
which is her legal right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fucking Texas.
Yeah. And then, you know, like always, like this just sort of felt like it was like among the least justifiable of the constant stream of black people being murdered by cops. I guess in a slight twist that I was not expecting, the officer is at least, quote, resigned from their job. I mean, it probably means they still get pension and whatever stuff, but
I believe they don't. Well, I just watched a snippet of the press conference. At the time of recording, this press conference is like still happening, I believe. I just watched part of it like 20 minutes ago. And the chief of the Fort Worth police, I don't know what you call him, the guy who runs the Fort Worth police.
Yeah. People call him chief.
Yeah. Chief police. he's doing like a very, a real, I don't want to say patting himself on the back type press conference, but he's really making clear, let me not throw so much judgment into this. He's very much making clear that had the officer, Aaron Dean is his name, not resigned, he's listing all of the consequences this officer is facing and would have faced had he not resigned. Like, we would have fired him. We are going to make sure that his record reflects he was dishonorably discharged from the force. He is no longer, gets the same civil protection, so we can now release his name. Like, they're going so petty and hard, not petty because it's deserved, but like it almost to me is a show of making shit right because they can, because this guy resigned. So it seems like an opportunity to go, CCC, we're actually handling this one right. Because it seems easier for them to do so because the man quit before they could fire him. But they really want you to know that these old Dallas police, Fort Worth, whatever, we're definitely going to fire him. So don't, you know, don't be mad at them anymore, was just the vibe I was getting from the press conference. I'm glad he's facing repercussions, but it was just the vibe of it was weird to me.
Yeah, and we'll see what those repercussions are, because if it's like every other racist police murder, the odds of anything actually meaningful happening are pretty slim. Anyway, that just is fucking horrible.
There's a snakehead fish that survives on land that they found in Georgia.
That's right. Snake news. Did someone send that to you under the guise of snake news?
No, but I found it. Someone read it aloud to me in the makeup trailer, and I was like, what the fuck is this monstrosity? This is out of our purview, but it's wild that this is a snake-headed fish that can survive on land, and wildlife experts say to kill it on sight.
It's like Asian shit. I think they're like horrible for the ecosystem. They'll just like kill anything.
Yeah, so kill that snakehead fish. It also was like, kill it, take close-up pictures, put it in your freezer, and then put it in a bag and send it to... I was like, who's doing that? Who's pulling up to the Piggly Wiggly, finding it in a parking lot, and doing all that? That's somebody's auntie. Goodness.
Oh, what an insane thing. Yeah, we live in a really fucked up world, needless to say.
Look at the picture of this thing. It is end times when you see this thing's face. It has a face. I've never thought of a fish as having a face. This has a face.
Oh, yeah. Fish face. God damn. All right. Well, we have to keep this a little short. We talked to Moshe Kasher, though. That was really fun.
It was very fun. This is my first time meeting Moshe. I hope it's not the last.
It will be. It was great. He's very funny. And here it is.
We normally just start with a cold open where we roll in. I want to get back to talking about what color is my parachute. Did you ever read that one?
I don't know what it is, honestly.
It's just a business book where you like read it and you're supposed to do some test or something that tells you what type of job you should have.
And the parachute represents the job? Or
I guess it's an analogy. I didn't read it.
Okay.
I did buy it for someone.
Golden parachute is retiring, right?
Golden handcuffs is a luxury that keeps you from... It's being rich. It's being a rich kid.
Yeah.
Wait, why are they handcuffs?
Because you're born into great wealth and therefore you have no idea what to do with your life because you never had to think about it.
Oh. Wouldn't that be more like golden horse blinders?
I thought golden handcuffs was like a job that paid so well, but that you didn't like.
Maybe it is.
Something like, maybe it's kind of the same thing. It's just like wealth is keeping you from what you really want.
It sucks to be wealthy, you guys.
It's so hard.
Close, I imagine.
The ultimate way to be, are we already going?
Yeah. We've been
is
rolling.
Is this a podcast?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Now it's a podcast.
Oh, cool, I love podcasting.
Well, look, we're here with Moshe Kasher.
Hi.
I don't know, what, comedian, writer, actor? we could easily have asked you this before we started rolling.
You already know this.
I didn't know if there's something else you like to be.
A comedian, actor, writer.
In that order.
Golden handcuffer.
Yeah.
So you
cuff other people.
You put the handcuffs on. So you are bestowing the wealth.
I go to young people from underprivileged backgrounds.
Uh-huh.
I kidnap them. I give them great wealth.
But yes.
But then I stymie their dreams.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the whole kidnapping part is morally weird, and I haven't fully worked out why I do that.
You gotta do what you gotta do.
In order to end this experiment, I have to do
that. The cuff part is the important thing, and how you get to the cuffs.
Yeah, so at the end, the cuffs come in. What I was gonna say is, the best thing is to be born poor, raised poor, and then come into a great amount of money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because then you get like real world perspective.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But then the luxury that everybody would actually like to have.
Counterpoint. Have you seen the videos of Britney Spears' house? Because it looks like a crazy Olive Garden. That's that formula personified,
right,
and it's a bad look.
Okay, but that's like nouveau riche, the idea. Yeah, right. You're right. It doesn't.
You dislike that? I think that those people are the happiest.
They say that lottery winners are not the happiest.
Oh, that's true.
They are the unhappiest.
Oh, sure. All that pressure, right?
Yeah, and they just don't know what to do, and then it doesn't end up netting happiness.
You know what you have to do if you win the lottery is you have to immediately take 2/3 of that money and set it on fire.
Oh, I was thought you were going to say give it away or invest it.
No,
pure waste.
Just do something crazy with it. That money never existed.
I think you got to use it to live on while you just finish that screenplay, guys.
Oh, that's a great idea. I'm actually working on a screenplay. Can I talk to you guys about that?
Please do.
Yeah. Well, I'm living in the LA area, and I'm working on a screenplay. It's like
love Hollywood.
I guess it's kind of like a mystery, like a detective kind of cop, sci-fi kind of teen coming of age kind of comedy drama. It's a comedy drama.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I had a word for that. At any rate, it's
one day.
What do you guys think?
I'll buy it.
Great.
Yeah.
Oh, we're buying. Oh, wait. It's called. No, I want to buy it.
It's called Golden Handcuffs.
Yeah. Great. I've got a golden parachute ready for myself as
I
retire.
God, I forgot that's what we were talking about.
I have read The Golden Parachute, and it actually applies outwardly to people that you've just met.
Oh.
And your job, your perfect job is film producer.
Oh, thank you so much.
So this is actually really working out.
Yeah, I can't wait. Oh, my God.
Wait, going back to the book, are there other colors of parachute?
Look, I didn't read the book. Right. I bought the book for somebody, but I guess it's like, what's your... It's and like we'll any of those.
We'll adapt it. Wait, we'll do a Mean Girls of it.
What color do you think parachutes are?
Just kind of burlap.
Oh, burlap?
I don't know.
Burlap is a very airy fabric.
Is that a fabric?
Yeah, and it's like what potato, like what flour goes in.
Oh.
That would be such a bad parachute. Very bad
for a parachute. What's an airtight thing?
Just like nylon, dude.
Yeah, nylon.
Nylon.
Or as they call it in the industry, parachute material.
Parachute stuff.
Parachute style fabric.
What is that? Parachute pants are different.
Parachute pants.
That refers to the shape, but it's not the material.
Are they back? Everything else in the 90s is back. I guess
I'd say they're back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Got to be back.
I like a lot of 90s things.
Are you from, did you grow up in the 90s?
I did, yeah. I mean, I was like a child and a teen or like a preteen.
Yeah.
I feel like 1997 was my best year.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah.
That was your peak.
I think so.
Huh.
I mean, not like popularity or like success wise.
2001, I guess.
I guess just like making sense of all the chokers I owned and having people accept
down those
them.
Towers. What date? I was going to ask, what date was it? I
finally got them towers down.
That was you?
I feel
weird.
Like
that's an edgy joke, dude.
I know, too far.
That was an edgy joke. I don't know if you guys saw this clip going around, but a woman took a picture of it on September 11th. She looked up in the sky.
Oh, yeah.
And there was a cloud formation that really was. A firefighter walking toward a cloud angel, and it really straight up looked like that.
Yeah,
that's wild.
I mean, it's not wild. It's pretty simple.
That's
God.
The G-O-D.
God created a mural to honor the firefighters to show us all that.
He has quite a paintbrush.
The firefighters came to the angels.
It is like cool to imagine that like the creator of everything. Is basically expressing himself like a child at the beach. Just like, look at what I made. It looks almost like a firefighter.
It actually reminds me, someone that I know, did you hear it become anonymous? It was about to be specific and then it wasn't.
And then you saved yourself.
Someone that I know was talking to someone else that I know who is an evangelical Christian and comes from evangelical Christian stock. And her sister had, they grew up in Turkey doing missionary work. And the sister, the older sister, just went to Thailand to go continue doing missionary work. And so the person that I know was like, so what's the plan exactly? Like you move to Thailand and like that kind of then what? And the person goes, well, this is going to sound a little like maybe, you know, ooky, but we believe in something called treasure hunting. And it's where we just go to the country and we pray for like a signal of what our mission ought to be. And then like, I guess it's like a needy person or a, I don't know exactly.
Sure.
And so
you'll know it when you see it.
Yeah, my friend was like, so wait, your plan is to just move to a foreign country and like wait for a miracle? And she's like, yeah, I mean, you know, God created everything. Like, don't you think he can create that kind of miracle? And I'm thinking to myself, couldn't he also just go directly to the Thai guy?
Yeah.
Like, why did he need an American Trump supporter to move to Bangkok?
That's how God works.
God's like, listen, I'm very powerful, but I can only work through a very specific segment.
It's like he's like a a Rube Goldberg guy. It's just, it's fun to see all the pieces come together for him. That's, it's not the result. It's just like, okay, so I said this thing to this kid when he was five.
He's like, yeah, I could definitely go directly to that guy in Bangkok and get him to convert to Christianity, but what's the,
not fun.
There's no challenge for me there.
You know, I want to judge this woman, but then the way you described like showing up to a place and just hoping for a miracle, you just described like everyone's journey to LA. So I'm like, I guess we're all idiots waiting for a miracle.
Wait, when you're a missionary, who pays for all your shit?
That's a good question. I would guess they probably like...
They pay for you, right?
Yeah, there's probably organizations.
I think you also have to raise a lot of money to go.
Right.
You do. I know it depends on the church, but like the people that I know in my life
like
that do it.
You feel like you could just run the scam and just be like, yo, waiting for the miracle. I'm playing a lot of Xbox in the meantime.
That's the part that about, and not to be too political, about missionaries that always baffled me that they are also, a lot of evangelical Christians are very anti-immigration. I'm like, if the primary mission here is to save souls that supersedes all natural law and all earthly rule,
wouldn't you
want all these people to come to the country so that you can save their souls?
No, you've got it wrong. They want to save the souls where they can go where the exchange rate is lower. So they want to go somewhere.
That's not the monetary exchange rate. You're talking about the soul exchange rate.
Oh, sure.
A Thai soul.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's my religion. Oh, we're talking soul exchange. I got caught on money exchange. I'm sorry.
Hey, any kind of exchange we want. Moshe, how's your life with racism been lately?
Good.
Is that a good way to ask
I'm
it?
Very active.
Yeah?
Hell yeah. Yeah. I'm not in these streets.
Ultimately, pro or con? Have you come down?
That,
have you picked
I honestly
a team yet?
Haven't been
have
able to. I haven't. Yet? I haven't been able to suss it out yet.
Yeah.
What do you mean? How's my life been with racism?
I don't
lately?
Know if you had a story or if you just had a like. The world's crazy, huh? And then we could move on. It's really an open. It's an open opportunity to say whatever you want.
Oh, really? Oh, thank God.
Hang on.
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, you know, if in my personal experience with racism, personally, I would say that the last 2 years have certainly felt an uptick of personal Jew attacks on Twitter. That's for sure. You can track these things emotionally. Yeah. You go, oh, there's more. There's more floating in. I've definitely gotten a lot of that. And they definitely, you know, I have a pretty thick skin. Well, I don't. I'm very sensitive about any criticism at all. Anything ever, it'll ruin my day. Mm-hmm. But in terms of like, not letting it get me down generally. I have a pretty thick skin, but the Jew stuff does set it because it's personal. Like,
yeah.
It gets me so down on this very sad. It's a very, the other stuff makes me angry. That stuff makes me sad.
So, if people are just like attacking your work or saying, I don't know, you're not funny or whatever shit they were giving you before.
Never heard that, but yeah, I guess theoretically. Yeah,
it's weird that I pulled that out there. I'm so sorry. but yeah, so you, do you feel like it made you less, or I don't know, maybe you were able to weather it better because it wasn't such a personal,
it just feels so, it feels so historical that it kind of hits me in a different place. It's not that criticism will level me for the day, but it's a very surface level ego leveling.
Yeah.
The attacks like that, they make me so sad because I feel like they represent a network.
Yeah.
And they're connected to something else. And that makes me, just bums me out.
That makes total sense.
Right. It's like a big thing that's out there that you don't have to be reminded of it all the time, because there's also like a limit to what you could do about it.
There really is. That's right. Yeah. And it's more difficult to explain away too. Like personal criticism, you can go, oh, these just stupid trolls or people are out here, they do this kind of thing. But like, I'm on lists. Mm-hmm. I know that about myself. I'm on like these weird internet, like Jew... Jew lists.
Yeah, yeah.
I guess that, like, you know, of there's content. Like I there's a conversation I had about anti-Semitism on Joe Rogan that, like, made the, like, I don't know how they do it, but the, like, let's share this around, but not in the good way.
Right.
Kind of.
Like, internet world.
Yeah. Surprising. I mean, I think it's the places that, you know, that we've heard about, you know, like a 4chan and like a Stormfront and shit like that. Like, it's like, and YouTube comments.
Right.
Which is equal to those other two things.
The truth is, though, if we're talking about things the way they hit you.
Yeah.
On the list of things that hurt, YouTube comments hurt me the least.
Really?
I don't take them seriously because I think Neil Brennan has a joke about how Beethoven's Fifth symphony on his fifth symphony. Not his fifth 40.
Oh,
not his fifth meal, but right. his fifth symphony
right.
has like 10,000 thumbs down or something like that. Like he does it more justice than I'm doing it. But it's like that on YouTube, everything's so toxic and negative that it's easier to just go, oh, I'm not taking that seriously. Yeah. But when there's a real, the list, that bothered me.
Oh, yeah, because that is historic. Like those lists,
there's that.
There's nothing more historic than those types of lists.
There was one good list to be on in Jewish history.
Oof. Yeah, even Santa. Quit making lists, man. Yeah. It's triggering.
Yeah.
Santa's canceled. Oh, man. Should we listen to
Should we
to,
do it? Let's do one. Okay, these, let's do this one. Here we go.
Hey, Andrew, Tony, and guest. I am a white person, a non-binary white person.
Gotta get that in there.
I'm calling just because I've kind of been thinking a lot. Growing up, I mostly related to characters and shows that were people of color. Just because they were typically different than a lot of the white people around them. As a queer non-binary person, you know, there's not really any queer characters online, on TV or I mean. So is it racist to kind of find myself identifying more with characters of color rather than white characters simply based on just kind of an understanding or a camaraderie with not quite fitting in? I know, like, obviously I'm white, and so there's a definite privilege, and I can more easily hide my queerness than like a black person could ever hide their skin. So, I mean, there's a definite difference, but I don't know. It's just something I've been thinking about. All right. Love the show. Bye.
First of all, caller, you are underestimating how easily I can hide my skin. I have several beekeeper outfits.
And a couple parachutes, right?
Yeah. They're made out of parachute material. I dare you to find me.
That's an interesting response to like systemic racism. Mm-hmm. Is for people of color to just all start wearing beekeeper costumes at all times.
Or what are those things called where you blend into the wall like a ghillie suit or whatever? That's like a full camouflaged outfit. Let's just all wear those.
Right. Okay. That would probably calm white America down a bit.
Just black people blended into all their walls.
Full camo coming up. Hello, how are you? Or a hazmat suit. We might be living in a future where we all need hazmat suits. Oh, so. God.
I tell you, when you have a kid, people... it freaks you out. But the funny part is that people really have license to come up to you and just go, oh my God, this child's going to be living on sustenance scraps, you know, just like pawing radioactive fish out of a river, no longer able to breathe the air. I mean, it's like, I'm like, do you think this is comforting or fun?
What is the point of saying that?
Yeah.
Also, even if some kids are living like that in America, not most of the
my kid. Yeah, that's right.
LA Hollywood, baby.
Let's be real here.
It's funny because Hollywood is going to be scorchingly bad.
Yeah. This is going to be.
Buy land in Washington.
Yeah. Or Vancouver.
Yeah, great idea. Yeah.
Alaska seems great. They've got all those lakes. There's never a water shortage.
Alaska's going to be like California. Here's what I learned. Caller, here's what I learned. This will help. There is a static amount of water in the world. It's not going anywhere.
Yeah.
It's just moving.
Yeah.
So.
And some of it's not going to be drinkable, less drinkable than others.
That's fair. I can't speak to
potability?
Alkaline? Yeah, potability sounds right. But California's going to get drier and drier and drier. The places where we shouldn't be, our water's going away.
Mm-hmm.
But places that are already wet, they're going to be real nice.
Ooh, nice.
Wetter.
Yeah. Go follow the wet.
Where were we?
Speaking of the Pacific Northwest, our last caller.
This caller wants to know if they are being racist for identifying with persons of color on film and TV because they were drawn to, I'm just guessing, their otherness. I think that's what they're getting at.
Yeah, I think they said that.
Yeah, I think that sounds very reasonable.
I think this is an experience that, I know Asian people have a lot, which is that, not all Asian people, but there's definitely a subset of Asian people, probably more like Bay Area types. Shout out to
going.
Who
I know where you're going.
Feel much more like minorities than Asian people in other parts of the country.
Oh, I didn't know you were going there.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
interesting. Okay.
I was going to, it ends with the Asian people that say the N-word, including people in my family.
That's where I thought you were going.
Yeah.
But I have a theory about that.
Yeah.
I have a race theory.
Good.
The Bay Area specifically I think it has to do with the Bay Area specifically having such a, storied history with like black entertainment and music that mm-hmm. every race defaults and leans to like the cool, the cool is not that this is unique to the Bay Area, but it's, I think, hyper concentrated in the Bay Area. The cool hierarchy goes up to black.
Oh,
and so every group just anecdotally.
Yeah.
Especially in the 90s. I think things are different now. It's hard for me to say what the Bay Area is like now, but sort of leaned towards, you know, it was Too Short and Souls of Mischief and Drew Down and E-40. It was like those were the kings and the heroes. So I do think in the Bay, but I know what you mean. There was a very specific vibe.
Ooh. Well, I kind of like, I'm always reminded when I go up to San Francisco that it's like Chinese people specifically think of themselves as like a downtrodden minority mm-hmm. in the Bay Area in a way that like often doesn't really play out in the rest of the country. Like New York a little bit, or New York a lot, but like, you know, in other places it's like often like more well-to-do waves of immigration of Asian people. So you're like, it's different.
That's really interesting.
Yeah.
I have to think about that. This is my home that we're talking about, and I have not analyze this from the same eyes you have.
No,
now I'm thinking that's interesting.
Because that's a thing that I always have when I'm arguing with like Bay Area Asian people about how they're kind of like cavalier with their privilege. Mm. They're like, you don't understand. And I was like, I guess I don't.
Mm-hmm.
I truly don't get what it's like to be like, you know, I met, you know, I even saw this with my cousins, like profiled by cops and shit like that, you know, for being like young and Chinese. And I was like, all right, that's a thing.
Well, San Francisco does have Chinese gangs.
Yeah,
I think maybe
exactly.
That isn't as true in the middle of the
Correct.
Country.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Maybe. Yeah.
So maybe there is like the sort of like police brutality kind of.
Yeah, that kind of shit is like
profile-y.
Where it's like, you know, even in L.A., you know, I know I'm not like getting just pulled over randomly the way like black and Latino people are. And like, yeah, I don't know. It's just interesting to me.
Yeah. I still haven't met any of your N-word wielding Chinese cousins.
You did, actually.
Wait, I did?
Yeah.
Oh, shit. I was on the lookout, too. I was like, Andrew talks so much shit about these people.
No.
Now I got to think back.
My cousin up in Seattle.
Well, I
would. Really?
Yeah.
Whoa, he's so straight-laced.
Well, listen, I'll tell you in a confessional moment that when I was a young man, and you can read all about this in my book. It's called Casher in the Rye, The True Tale of a White Boy from Oakland Who Became a Drug Addict, Criminal, Mental Patient, and Then Turned 16. At any rate, that I used to be an N-word wielding white person in the good bad way.
Yeah.
The bad good way. I feel like they're going away. But in the 90s, that was sort of like we all, and one thing that I anecdotally noticed is that you pretended like, oh no, I'm just so down, I've got a pass. Mm. But you knew you didn't really. So when people came into your orbit that you didn't know, you would very quickly, you'd be like, this is just how I talk. This is how I was raised. This is who I am. Mm-hmm. And then the minute somebody came into your circle that you'd never met, you would immediately somehow find the fortitude to not.
Mm. Right.
You'd just go, oh, I guess
I don't do that now.
And you've got to wait around for a while. And you'd be like, do you want to talk to her and let her know that I'm kind of actually good on this? Or do you want to, are we not doing that? Okay, I'll wait. So,
oh my God.
So there might have been some of that going on, as you know.
That's actually a great example of like the people who don't have that filter. Or, yeah, I know what you're saying, where it's like they know, they switch, they literally code switch because they know that they shouldn't be doing it.
Right. It's like good code switching.
Yeah, code switching.
I guess it's not good because you shouldn't be in the code. The first line of code seems like it was corrupted already. But let's pretend that was an okay programming, not a programming error.
You should always be in the software update, white people, is what we're saying.
It's a good idea. It's a good point. It seems like it was an update. You want to know how I stopped saying it?
Yeah.
So I was raised in Oakland, and there was a lot of white boys in the 90s who thought that that was like, that was the way we talked. And, North Oakland, that was our thing. We were sitting around. Right. And as I lived in Northern Oakland. I was in the north of Oakland, but I wasn't really from North Oakland. Those are kind of different spiritual concepts, really. But
right.
At any rate, then I got sober, my early friends in that first circle was a kid who was, he was sober, like maybe 5 years longer than me and maybe 5 years older than me. So he was probably 20 and I was 15, and he was a black dude, and was like one of my like people that we all got sober together. And he was kind of my idol, I guess. Mm-hmm. And he one day threw me up against a wall and he goes, stop saying the N word. Stop saying North Oakland. If you ever do either of those again, I'm going to beat your ass. And I was like, well, it's like sometimes spiritual journeys happen over time and over your mind opens like a lotus flower. And sometimes it's just a guy throwing you up against a fence. And I was like, oh, this is not only something I'm going to change, but it was like, you're right.
I
snapped. I was like, oh, of course. This is absurd. So maybe we just need more Larrys in the world.
I do think that like any white kid who is saying the N word just needs to be thrown up against the wall a couple times.
The
good ones will go reprogrammed. You're correct, sir. And the other ones will just stay shit. You know.
Here's my question, because I guess I'd always felt like relating to the caller a little bit. Like it is this sense of otherness that kind of like, but maybe that sense of otherness, I guess, is like, it's just like. For a lot of like white kids and Asian kids, and in my case a little bit too, it's like just that sense of rebellion that you're like, well, I'm not normal, so what can I gravitate towards?
Yeah, well, and it's like the worst time of your life trying to fit in. So if you don't fit in with the people that you supposedly look like, you're grabbing onto things that are
right. I mean, people always talk about. I mean, you know, it's like, why is Harry Potter so resonant with like young nerdy folk? It's because it's like the story of a person who was disempowered, who got great power out of nowhere.
Yeah.
So like, if you feel like an outsider and you see like a powerful person of color on screen, you probably go like, oh, outsider, but power.
I also think like, however, for the caller, like however you're handling it, it's fine. Are you just like, do you just have a box set of Living Single and you talk about all the time when people come over? Because that's cool and I want to know you. Is it weirder than that? You know the line.
I'm going to say.
You listen to us enough.
And just going back, a little bit of criticism. There's how slow you talked tells us that you have thought about this too much.
You've overthought it. You're a good person. You're worrying too much. Your pace was quite slow.
I am thinking to myself, as you say the Living Single thing, like, my immediate reaction is, you like what you like. Why flog your things that you relate to? But then I am thinking, like, if I came over to your house and you were like, let me just show you my favorite DVDs. This is Star Wars. I love Billy Dee Williams in this one. Okay, this is, and we just continued down this path. Now, this is Miami Vice. Now, I'm not a big fan of Don Johnson. And we just continued. At a certain point, I would like, I think I would back out of the
apartment. Well, I think we all know those people. And it's more just about like, you like what you like, but sometimes you got to hide what you talk about. Right? Like,
or just know how it comes across. Yeah, and I think that's like, the caller is definitely doing that.
You already are aware.
Yeah.
You're doing great.
All right. We should do another voice.
Can we, before we do that, just take a moment to, I mean, I was just coming up with things off the top of my head, and the two media examples I was able to pull.
You
want to
punch him up?
Well, I just feel like no one made fun of me and you should have, which was Star Wars and Miami Vice. These are the two characters of color I was able to come up with in the entire pantheon of entertainment.
I do like how, it was like
Tubbs?
I would say Tubbs or Crockett.
Tubbs or Crockett and
Lando and E-40 is basically what you've said. So
that's all I got.
The black people that live in Moshe's head are a weird crew.
But what a lit barbecue.
Actually,
that would
pretty
be
dope. Yeah, sure.
pretty dope.
I'd love to meet any of them.
All right, let's fucking do this.
Hi, my name is Cecilia. I'm calling just to get your guys' opinion on this. I've been living in Korea for the past 10 years, and I'm getting married to a Korean man. I myself am Puerto Rican, but I am pretty pale, so I don't know if that matters. Anyway, we are having two ceremonies, one in the States and one in Korea. And per the request of my future mother-in-law, our wedding in Korea is going to be a traditional Korean wedding. When I told this to my white friend, she kind of went a little crazy and said that it's not right for me to dress in traditional Korean attire and that it's basically culture appropriation. I kind of feel like if I was just kind of wearing a traditional gown and a headpiece to take photos for my Instagram or whatever, that would be more in line with culture appropriation. And also, I'm terrified of my future mother-in-law, and I think if she told me to slaughter a pig, I would. So even if it is culture appropriation, I am going to do it. But I really feel like that, you know, I'm marrying into the family, and I'm trying to respect their wishes as much as possible. And I don't really feel like this is necessarily in line with culture appropriation at this point. So I don't know. What are your thoughts? Thanks.
Woo!
I'm loving it.
I love it.
This was a lot of shit in this one.
There's layers, a lot going on.
Fucking bonkers.
My favorite moment was when she said, "My friend who is white." Uh-huh. I'm like, hey, we already knew.
We knew. Oh my god, that white friend has to sit down.
This is how these stories always start.
This is wild.
Oh, that is so awesome. She's like, it does not matter the wishes of your Korean mother-in-law. That's not what this is about.
For whom you are doing this entirely separate ceremony from your wedding.
In Korea.
Yeah, in Korea, marrying your Korean spouse. You cannot. No, this isn't cultural appropriation. This is cultural acquisition. You are getting married. You are acquiring a piece of.
You're part of this shit now.
Yeah, you're in this shit. God, I can't. White people have to sit down sometimes. God.
I'm sitting down right now, and I'm feeling good about it.
Oh, yeah.
Just
doing
a
good job.
Imagine this woman. Imagine this woman's friend freaking out.
So what do we do about, like how do, what do we do to... Is there a conversation to be had with this white friend, or like, what is the point?
I do think that like sometimes when it comes to things like this, trying to do the right thing is a emotional state and not mm-hmm. a mental state. Mm-hmm. And like, that's clearly, in my opinion, listening to it, the friend mm-hmm. is just a person having a like frantic reaction to a set of stimulus that rhymes with some other thing that
yeah.
it's like a Burning Man woman in a Native American headdress images in her mind. She's like, you're in the headdress and that feels, and yeah. it's like not even
yeah.
played out in the logic field.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think she's taking snapshots of what she's seen as being incorrect and don't do this. And she's just desperately trying to put the puzzle together. But it's like, you're missing pieces, honey.
Well, with cultural yeah. appropriation in particular, the context is king, right? Context is always king. Like, yeah, the Burning Man.
Or queen.
Oh, so sorry. Or neither. Or both.
All of it.
But you know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and that is the friend is a person who has batted the context immediately away.
Yes.
And only focus on the incident, not any of the information.
It is, yeah, because it does feel like it's like the white friend has just like a flow chart, essentially,
yeah.
that is not like complete.
That's right.
It's like, do you dress up as another race? Wrong.
And yeah,
it's like,
exactly.
Okay, like, but at the same time, I guess I understand how for most white people, that's just a good enough set of rules. You know,
it's like a best practices. You know, in Judaism, there's a concept called building a fence around the law, which is that so in the Bible, it says, which I believe in, it says in Thailand, I believe in bringing it to Thailand and waiting for a sign and then going and making Thai people follow my religion.
Uh-huh. Just do a few showcases. You get an agent.
Is that racist?
Go find out. They'll find you. They'll let you know on Twitter. Don't worry.
Like in the Bible, it says you shouldn't cook a kid in its mother's milk, right? We know that one. So then they extended it. They put a fence around it to say, oh, you know what? Actually, don't eat goat with milk from another goat. And then they go, you know what? Actually, don't eat milk with meat. Actually, you know what? Don't eat. Now you can't have a chicken melt. Now you can't have a, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that doesn't quite make sense, but they built these fences around the law so that the law is so far out there that you'll never violate the original tenant.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Sure,
so maybe that's
sure.
what we're dealing with.
Yeah.
It's enough to just go, no, don't ever do that.
Yeah. And don't do anything like it.
Right. Because how often are you going to find yourself in the situation where your friend is like, no, you don't understand. I'm actually getting married in Korea, and a Korean woman asked me specifically, said it would be a great honor to her. That's going to happen almost to nobody.
Like a Korean person's forcing me to do this.
Yeah. Very rare.
Like, it's very specific.
Yeah. It is the same. But I guess it's like this thing where it's like the type of like white person that's so confident with this without like thinking through the fuck they're saying is a little bit like, come on.
I guess, Andrew, you started to touch on it, though, where you're like, some of these white people, like, we'd rather have them act like that. So it's
the more I'm saying it, though, it's like,
fine,
don't bother correcting your friend.
Tell your friend, like, I'm so glad you have these extreme rules. Make sure, maintain that for all of your Halloweens going forth. However, for me and my personal situation, I'm good.
There's probably a world where you can just, like, nod and smile at your friend and be like, great, thank you for the advice.
That is exactly.
And then block them on Instagram.
That is the right thing to do, probably, is to just go, oh, totally, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, great. Thank you for that little reminder.
And then
you don't talk to them for about 2 years.
Yeah.
And go get married and put the
outfit on. I mean, we talked about this a little bit on this show about how this show is so like US-centric or so like North American-centric that like shit is just different. It's just different when you're in a different country in a different, like more global environment. And it sounds like she's building a really globalized family. It's a different can of worms. And you live in Korea. There's a whole, like, your white friend just doesn't know what's going on.
That's what I mean when I say context. I've thought and read too much about cultural appropriation because I did an episode of my show on the topic, and it was definitely why I got on all those lists. But anyway, because it's a mind bender, I think, for a lot of people. But again and again, the things that I read were saying, like, everything about this particular topic is context based, and everything about this particular argument in the meta culture is not nuanced or context based. It's all rule based, and rules don't really make for good. So, you know, you look at something and it goes, that it's like you were saying, you know, when you see it, it's like you see one thing, you go, that feels, I don't like that.
Yeah.
And that becomes like, don't ever do anything.
Right.
the fence around the law thing like makes a ton
that
of
resonates,
sense.
Yeah.
That really is just like, yeah. And God, yeah. Just ignore this person.
Ignore your friend. We tell people to dump their friends a lot on this show.
You know what you do? Tell your friend to go to a nice Japanese bath. Go to Tokyo, go to a nice Japanese bathhouse where they will force them to wear like a traditional Japanese robe. And it would be a grave insult if they didn't put it on. And see what she does.
Yeah,
like,
right?
Deal with it.
She's like, no, I'm going to wear my teddy.
Yeah. Like, nope, I am not allowed to wear this. I'm wearing my one piece from Old Navy.
I'm going to once again call an audible on this question that we've punted twice, which means I just hate it.
So this one's
just going forever.
Hi there. So I have a friend who's Jewish, and she'll say that she's not white because she's Jewish. And I'm wondering what your thoughts are about this. And this, by the way, is usually in conversations about, I don't know, like virtue signaling, social justice, all of that. Thanks.
I'm actually out of time, you guys. I'm so sorry. Yeah, I got to run.
Actually, your assistant came in and said you have 20 more minutes.
Thank you for telling your listeners that I have an assistant. I like that idea. I like that rumor.
She's very fashionable.
I just call it an audible because, you know, this isn't the most interesting.
That call?
Yeah.
That doesn't interest you.
No. That was, we've had, I feel like, variations of it come up. But I feel like, you know... I'd like to hear your take on it.
I think, I always say that if you want to know if Jews are white or not, ask people that really like white people.
right.
But obviously that's simplistic because Jews are very complicated.
That is very funny though.
And it's true. It's rhetorically fun, but it's also true. It's like
white people connoisseurs don't love Jews.
No, if you believe in whiteness as a like science fiction quest, which I feel like a lot of real white supremacists do, Jews are not white. We're like, like the, you know, the shapeshifter kind of top of the like evil pyramid and we look white probably to be able to further our nefarious ways.
To beguile them. Yeah, sure.
Well, okay. One of the complicated things, obviously, first and foremost, important for me to say, some Jews straight up, this isn't a conversation. They are not white.
Yes.
They are Arab or, from Arab countries. Yeah. They're black. They're just aren't. But we're not. It is funny how this conversation is always about European Jews.
Yeah.
Like, yeah.
And all the Sephardi and Mizrahi Jews just get kind of left out of the conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Right.
Like, no, we really aren't white.
They're like, we promise.
Yeah. No, we actually.
Like, even the insinuation that's being made that doesn't apply.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Like, I am a person of melanin enhanced skin. So, whatever on that. So, that is significant. Every European Jew knows that we are complicated. We are both things. We reap all the benefits of the surface level of almost all the benefits of the surface level of sort of systemic racism stuff. Mm. You know, whatever. You know, we don't get pulled over like you were talking about. Mm-hmm. We don't get our credit denied. We don't get. We have in the past gotten redlined and held out of being able to join certain clubs and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. But then there's like a secondary underneath kind of layer, which is that if you want, in terms of microaggressions, there are many.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And in terms of macroaggressions, there are some.
Yeah.
And so, no, I don't consider myself classically white, but I'm also...
Dye a white.
I mean, I definitely don't think of myself... Obviously, as a person of color, that's pretty obvious.
Yeah,
yeah. You have your own category that makes sense to you, and it's like what you were talking about with the discussions of nuance make it incredibly clear what you're saying. What this caller's friend is saying is just like, I don't want to be lumped in with white people when you're talking about how shit white people are. That's where that sounds like it's coming from. Is like, no, but I'm not white because lately it's been fun for white people to talk about how white people are shit. Everyone seems to be jumping on that bandwagon. So you see a lot of white people suddenly going, well, I'm not actually, I'm Italian or I'm Jewish or whatever.
right.
Just because they don't want to be talked about poorly. Part of that.
Interesting. Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, it's a funny thing. I'm sure you've talked about this a million times. Like, white is just nothing. White isn't even real. There isn't any white person. No one's white. Whiteness is a fantasy. It's a fantasy about a connection piece that doesn't even truly exist.
Yeah.
It's like, so I don't know. All I know is that white people generally don't get their places of worship blown up by white supremacists.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well, there you go.
It's pretty. I think the way that I relate to this question is like you were saying, Moshe, it's like whiteness doesn't exist. I mean, the spectrum of that stuff, it's like I feel like East Asian people are on it, you know, in the same way. There is certain privileges of whiteness, not all of them afforded, you know, like probably white Jews are a little bit closer, but like there's also plenty of East Asian people who just want that whiteness.
Interesting.
You know what I mean? And that's the element that I really, God, I talk way too much shit about the worst Asian people.
Where are you going now?
No, it's just one of those things. It's like, maybe overly magnified in my mind, but like I think that's the thing that makes me hyper vigilant about that shit. You know, it's like because of the parts of my community that do really want to be white, and I would just, without putting words in your mouth or just making a comment that hopefully isn't too, is that there is a portion of white Jews who also like embrace the whiteness.
I just don't think so. I don't think I've ever met a Jew in my entire life that didn't think of themselves as like a little bit of an asterisk-y.
Oh, okay.
Well, you know what? I take that back. It's somebody, to me, somebody that, first of all, I mean, what's wrong with even being white? Well, it's great to be everything.
It's
like, whatever. White people are white and that's great.
Yeah.
But the only person I could think of that would think of themselves as like, I want that non-asterisk is a person who doesn't actually, it's not about really wanting to be white, it's about not really wanting to be different. Just to be, or even different in any way.
Yeah.
There's people that have abandoned their connection piece with their, because that is interesting about European white people, is like Jewish people, is that if you just abandon the self-identity, then you can just kind of like pop into the mainstream society.
Yeah.
Except in Germany, this is an interesting tidbit. Did you know about this thing that happened in Germany? The German Jews were the most assimilated of all Jews in Europe. They were the least, they were the most matriculated into German society. The famous, which is not that matriculated because it was still Europe. The famous sort of idea of the German Jew was on Christmas, they would have a Christmas party with a Christmas tree and a Christmas ham and all Jewish guests, right? And, but they were the most, the place that this whole plan comes from is the place where the Jews had assimilated the deepest and the most. And so the idea is like, maybe you can't just pop your way into acceptance just saying, I look kind of similar to you.
Yeah. Right. There's ultimately, the list can get made at any time.
And people do, I mean, honestly, it really is what is, like, racism, just like privilege, just like everything else, is like a incredibly complicated spectrum. If the racism is the most intense and binary kind, which is the, like I say, like the mythological racism where you believe, you know, that you're a Viking.
Right.
You know, there are people at the bottom and there are people at the top. And then the Jews are like the sorcerer people at the, like, that's where it's almost like fiction, like sci-fi racism.
Yeah.
Which is the most scary and dangerous, because then people go like, I must take a sword and like Conan the Barbarian go in and do some damage.
Yeah.
If you believe in that, then you definitely believe that the Jew is a static and permanent state of being that is a blood magic.
Yeah. Speaking of, actually,
description of this.
Yeah. No,
I've thought about this a lot.
I feel like actually, like, some of the things you said, ultimately, I feel like I've, like, some version of that is probably like a decent argument against the concept of like fantasy as a genre. Because it literally, like, so much of that shit is just about categorizing people by race. Like, everything, like, sci-fi often has it too. Aliens, like, everyone has the same fucking personality based on race.
But right.
I just think it's truly insidious.
It's insidious in fantasy, but fantasy is just people's brains heightened.
Yeah.
That's just genre. That's just the regular genre. But people have gone, what if there were no rules and our true selves can come out? And surprise, your true self is like categorically separating the races. And then when you make the TV show out of it, you still ain't putting enough of us in there. So, like, it's truly just like people are bad and fantasy is just like doesn't have enough fucking rules on it. That's why I like sci-fi. Sci-fi has more rules.
Oh, that's interesting. Why do you think that is?
Because I think it's just a different type of a left brain types of people that started perpetuating the genre back in the day, where they wanted rules, they wanted it science-based, and they wanted it tracked to things. So I think that allowed for more, like, realistic portrayals of people.
I'm now thinking there's all this, you know, Afrofuturism and black sci-fi, but is there black fantasy?
I'm sure someone's doing it. Like, I'm sure there are graphic
African
novels.
Like King type of thing. Like, I can't think of an example of...
Right, like the way that if Dungeons & Dragons is basically medieval Europe.
Right.
Yeah. There's no, like, or no popular, like, version of that that's, like, set in Africa.
Right. Is there?
Maybe it just hasn't become popularized here.
Maybe. Yeah. I'm sure it exists and we don't know about it. Or
we're the wrong people to ask, though, because I think we both dislike the genre so much.
Oh, I hate everything.
So, Andrew doesn't like any genres.
But yeah, I guess, that's interesting. I'm going to look into
this. Right? Because it's also like, you know, tip for all the Hollywood people out there. That shit is interesting.
Right.
It should exist because it would be cool.
That is interesting. I've never thought about it until right now, that fantasy really means like a look at like fantasy Europe.
Yeah.
It's like knights and armor and kings and queens Europe.
Yeah.
It's like a magical perfect land where brown people are Moors. Like, what's...
Well, have you ever read the Chronicles of Narnia?
I have.
It's my primary book growing up. It's like it's a rough read when you start to think about...
How extremely Christian for you.
It's so Christian. I know, exactly.
Yeah.
But I loved it. But their main adversary... First of all, they were always described as like... It's really bad. Because he's a guy that you want to think of as like a good... C.S. Lewis, like a bit deep thinker, but it's like the Narnians are like, it was always like fair and beautiful. And then their enemies were like the Calamaran with the name of their name, like the dark, swarthy skin with their curved swords and their pointy shoes. I'm like, I feel like we maybe know who you're talking about.
And their large hips and their banging rhythms.
Rhyme talking. It's like, we're very clear on who you're
rhyme talking. Their hair seemed to grow up towards the sun. Anyway.
I remember as an aside, there was in the last battle, which is just like the Book of Revelations. It's like, did you read them all?
I read up until I got old enough to be like, this is just some Jesus propaganda. It's
hardcore Jesus
propaganda. Yeah, so I think I have to like 6 books maybe.
Yeah, I think I did and do not know the Bible well enough that I think it would all be kind of new to me. It's like the ones that I read, I'm like, all right.
They're great books, but they definitely are a product of their time. At any rate, the final book is like straight up the book of Revelation. It's like the lion god Aslan comes back and he's like, I'm back. And then the whole thing ends with him like opening up 2 doors. One is to his kingdom and one is to the kingdom of the god Tash, who is just Allah. I mean, just straight up. And and he's like, this way or this way. And like, there's a good Calamarin who is like not afraid and walks, everybody's too scared to go. And he walks through the door of the Tash god and ends up in Aslan's kingdom. This is progressivism.
They rerouted.
This is white progressivism in the early 1900s.
Right.
He ends up in Aslan's kingdom. He's like, whoa, what? What am I doing here? And Aslan's like, any good deed that is done in the name of Tash is a good deed done for me, and any sin that is done in my name is a blah blah. Essentially, saying that you don't have to believe in Jesus to get into heaven, which was heresy. And I remember that very evangelical Christian family that I was talking about at the beginning that are now in Thailand. Mm-hmm. I remember them giving a little speech, and they go, "And I don't believe in blah blah blah, C.S. Lewis or any other heresy." I remember that as a young man.
Oh my god! I love the idea that C.S. Lewis at one time was like the number one.
Yeah, fucking progressive public Christian.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I guess, and I think that dovetails well. We might as well go out on a callback, because that was a perfect mic drop right there, Moshe. Moshe, can you tell people where they can see, hear, read more of you, your comedy, etc.?
Yeah, I'm on lists, Smart Talking Jew on Twitter, if you're looking for that, in the white supremacy.
We'll retweet it. We'll put a link to it on the Twitter.
Please don't. Yeah. Yeah, you can. I have a podcast with my wife where we also do a live advice relationship advice call in a show called the Endless Honeymoon Podcast. We help people with their sex life and relationship advice problems, and so that's weekly. It's on Apple Podcasts, and you can come see me live doing stand up. And I also have a new album that's coming out. I don't know the date now, but maybe. Maybe I emailed you a date and it was just played. And that's coming out very soon. It's all crowd work album. It's called Crowd Surfing. And I did it's a full hour of just some of the craziest, weirdest stories ever. It's great. So I'm happy and excited about that.
Fucking awesome.
I love that. So that will be out very soon, if not
now.
That time. Just said. Thank you so much for
thanks for coming in, man.
Talking to us about weird Christian books and all kinds of shit.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome.
We are back. We both have to go back to our respective jobs.
Yes, we both are being doors are being knocked on and we both have to leave. But thank you guys as always for listening. Thanks for putting up with our shenanigans of recording. I'm sorry the sound isn't as perfect as it could be, but I'm sure Jordan has done an amazing job to make it mostly perfect.
Oh, I'm sure this is better. I mean, again, last week I was like slumped over your coffee table, basically. I realized as we were doing it, but it was sort of too late, that my face was getting further and further away from the mic over the course of the hour or whatever. So not good.
Yeah, Andrew, work on your mic technique.
I can't.
Conditions are insane. But speaking of job requirements, because of both of our very intense, lovely jobs, we unfortunately are not going to be able to make it to Toronto. I'm so sorry. We were trying to work it out. That's why we're kind of late in making this announcement for the Hot Dogs Festival.
Really sorry. Really sorry to miss everyone.
Maybe one of us could go and get a guest host, which isn't ideal, but at least it would have been something. And we just could not make the flights work, you know.
Yeah.
I always feel like Canada is right there and we can get there quickly, but this is my still living in Chicago brain where it was like an hour and a half flight.
Right.
That's not the case here. We far away. Yeah. So we hope to come back soon.
Yeah. We're on it. We really apologize. And that's it. That's all we can say right now. I'm not thinking straight. What else do we say to people?
Follow us on
Twitter,
things.
Instagram, Yosis Racist, Trondi Newman, Andrew T. Well, keep calling 323-389-7223. That's 323-389-RACE. Is that all we got?
all. Podswag.com/yo. That's all. We love you. Thank you for listening.
We have to go to our other jobs. Bye.
Bye.